let's just maybe just start about just maybe your professional history, Tim.
Okay.
Now, you're not originally from Western New York, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Cleveland originally. Went to Baldwin-Wallace College. Didn't even have journalism as a class, let alone – or no, I think there was a journalism 101 as part of the communications department, but I didn't take it. I took two writing classes is all at Baldwin-Wallace. I was a sports management major, and I wanted to work in a front office of a team. That was my thing. I wanted to continue in sports for as long as I could. I was a high school football player and baseball and track, and I ran track at Baldwin-Wallace for a little bit until my back gave out. I was a high jumper. But I also picked Baldwin-Wallace not only because it had sports management, but because the Cleveland Browns at the time had their facility right there on the campus. And so my thinking was, if I'm going to get an internship or a chance at a job, that would be almost, you know, too easy, right? It made too much sense.
Right.
It made too much. Not that I wasn't going to have to work at it, but it made too much sense. And my freshman year, I was into photography. I liked taking sports photos and working in a dark room and that whole thing back when dark rooms existed, getting into the chemicals and the red lights and all that stuff. And so I took photos for the school newspaper. And it was a once-a-week publication, and one of my roommates happened to be a sports writer. And he disappeared one time. He had fallen in love. He'd met a girl on campus, and they just disappeared, probably because they just wanted to get away from me, you know, have some privacy. And
and your camera.
While I'm sitting there playing – yeah, my camera. While I'm sitting there playing Nintendo, and I'm doing Tecmo Bowl, and they're not – I can't take a hint. So right. – He disappeared, and he had a story on the tennis team that was due, and so the sports editor called looking for him, and I said, I don't know where he is. Our sports editor at the time, I don't want to say her name. I should look her up because it just now dawns on me. She was from Buffalo. Oh. It's funny. I don't know how she ended up as the sports editor, but anyways, because I was a photographer, I knew her, and I felt badly for her. So I said, I'll write the story for her. And I want to bail out my roommate, too. You know, I don't want to get him in trouble. So it's like, I'm going to make everybody happy, make a couple of bucks because they paid you, I don't know what it was, 10, 15 bucks or whatever it was, beer money. And although I was a freshman, so, you know, it was still beer money. I'm sorry. I can't tell a lie. Okay. It's still under – at 18, it was still beer money.
Okay.
Feel free to edit this. You know, I don't want to get you in trouble with the authorities.
That's fine. We'll edit.
You're not going to edit this, are you?
We'll see. Let's see how clear it came out. No, it's all good. It's all good.
No, feel free to leave it in there. I have no shame. So, yeah, it was beer money. And so the story comes out, and I see it in the paper, and it says, "By Tim Graham" on it. And it was I think I filed the story on a Monday. The paper came out on Wednesday morning, so it's a pretty quick turnaround. And the whole idea of me writing something that was being judged and looked at, am I any good? I don't know. Am I terrible? Did I screw anything up? You know, it was in a rush. I was trying to help somebody out. And so it was kind of a thrill knowing that my work was out there to be evaluated almost immediately with my name on it. This wasn't an assembly line, or I'm not working in a cubicle or even a paper where my name is on it, but only the professor reads it. This was out there for the entire school to see. And I found that to be pretty intoxicating. You know, it was just men's tennis story. But I thought that was pretty cool. And so I don't know if I started writing regularly at that time, or maybe I filled in late. I don't remember exactly how it happened right after that, but I just knew that this was fun. I enjoyed it. And turned out that the feedback was positive. The faculty advisor liked what he saw and encouraged me to keep writing. So I did. And you know, when you get that positive reinforcement, of course you want to keep trying it.
Right.
So I think it was, I think it was probably during my sophomore year in college that I decided I wanted to be a sports writer.
Wow. Okay. So then professionally, where'd you start?
I started, here's the thing. Because Baldwin Wallace doesn't have journalism as a major, and I wanted to graduate in 4 years, I remained a sports management major, but I wasn't going to get internships or things like that. I didn't have the foundation that would get me the orthodox training to become a journalist. So I started working for the different community newspapers around Northeast Ohio. There was a paper in Kent called the Record Courier. I'd cover high school football games for them, high school basketball games. Actually, my first assignment at a real paper, which would be the Record Courier, it was only published 6 days a week, but it was a daily newspaper that you paid for on the rack and everything, was a baseball tournament that had different levels to it. It was at a big complex that had probably 10 fields, and it involved like a coach pitch. Like that was so the coach is out there like lobbing the ball. And I went out there and covered it as though, you know, I were covering the World Series.
Right.
And I went out there and I was in way over my head. In terms of I'll get to why.
Yeah,
I learned a trick. So I'm out there for probably 8 or 10 hours. I'm gathering all this information. I go back to the office to write this story, and I had way too much information. And you got paid $25 a story. So when I did the math, I thought to myself, "What a moron I am." But what happened was I covered it so well, and so that I kept getting more assignments. But the next year came, and they said that tournament that you covered last year is coming back. We want you to go cover it again. To which I showed up for the last hour of the tournament, went through all the scorebooks, and got the same exact information I got while I was sitting there watching all these games. So I was able to cut my workload down from 12 hours when you factor in the writing and all that stuff, down to about 3 or 4 hours. And I still didn't make any money, but at least I didn't.
You learned that time management is an important part of journalism.
I didn't kill myself. Yeah. So that's how that was my training ground, was covering youth sports. And then I had to get ambitious. And when I graduated from Baldwin Wallace, the Record Courier hired me full time. I was there for just a few months. I took a job at the Boston Herald answering phones, covering high schools there, but it was obviously a step up in terms of circulation and the market. Cover the occasional college event. I went out to Fenway Park a handful of times for various things. But my first day at the Boston Herald, Rupert Murdoch sold the paper to a publisher named Pat Purcell, and Rupert Murdoch's empire had been backing the Boston Herald, and now everybody's in a panic because we don't have the financial backing, probably similar to what a lot of people are feeling at the Buffalo News right now with Warren Buffett selling. Pat Purcell, he had no other newspaper interests. He was local. I think he had been the publisher, and he just decided he was going to take it on. And so everybody was nervous. My boss who had hired me said, "Get out as fast as you can." So I went back to Ohio, took a job in Lorain, Ohio, and this is where it gets boring, as an assistant sports editor. I hated it. It was a terrible place to work, and I was actively looking to get out. Ended up in Las Vegas, again, covering high school sports, but I was there for almost 5 years and moved up the ladder. I covered UNLV and I covered a lot of boxing, and that's where I really got into boxing. Any event that came through Vegas, I was covering it, NASCAR, IndyCar, golf. I covered Tiger Woods' first PGA victory. It was pretty cool. So a lot of cool things come through Vegas, but nothing up until now that the Golden Knights and the Raiders are there. Everything was transient. Everything was just passing through. Yep. Even UNLV, the kids are just passing through, the players. And so there was no gravitas to covering sports in Vegas. It all just seemed too superficial for me. And I wanted to work in a big league city. And there was a job open at the Buffalo News and to cover colleges and to be the third man in on the Bills.
Right.
So I applied for the job, and fortunately I got it, and that's how I ended up in Buffalo.
So that first
January 2000.
January 2000, that was your first, and then you left, and then you came back for a while.
I did. I left in 2007. I felt, so at the time, I was covering the Sabres, and I loved it. I did love covering the Sabres. But at the time, you had Jerry Sullivan and Bucky Gleason and Bob DeCesare were writing columns. Young guys, still young guys. They should still be doing it. But in 2006, I'm probably starting to think this way, maybe even 2005. But I'm looking at down the road, the Bills writers were Mark Gaughan and Alan Wilson, and also young guys. And I'm thinking to myself, have I maxed out? Is this all I'm going to be at the Buffalo News? I don't see any of these guys leaving. They right. have, you know, they all had families and they were young. So I just had this itch. Like I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't want to be complacent.
Yep.
And the idea of having maxed out at the age of, what would I have been? 35. I don't know. It just made me anxious. Yeah. I got antsy.
Right.
And so I had the ability to go cover the NFL for the Palm Beach Post in 2007. And it was a terrible, terrible season. They went 1-15.
It was only terrible for them. If you're a Bills fan, it wasn't so
bad. It was terrible. You know what? It was terrible for me in that I went from being the main beat writer in a one-paper town for a National Hockey League team, which this will sound conceited, but I think it was true at the time. Nothing happened on that beat that I didn't know about ahead of time. And if somebody else was going to nobody broke any stories on that beat other than me. And that was a tough, that was also the type of team where you didn't have insider information getting out. Darcy Regier was not the type to slide information to Darren Dreger or Bob McKenzie or Elliot Friedman. Darcy Regier kept everything really tight. So I didn't even have that insider thing to worry about that a lot of reporters do now. And still, I guess I do as an NFL writer because Schefter and Rappaport and Chris Mortensen, the agents feed these guys and the GMs. I digress. But I had a command of that beat, I felt. And then to go to South Florida and cover now a National Football League team where the world, Buffalo Sabres coverage is only looked at by a pretty finite audience compared to the National Football League, and especially a team like the Dolphins. And now there are three daily newspapers. There are three sets of TV stations because Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Palm Beach all have TV stations. They all have their sports stations, radio stations. So I was terrified. And it made me super sharp. You know, I got more aggressive than I've ever been. I really learned. It was like being thrown into a lake. And so lo and behold, you have the 1-15 Dolphins juxtaposed with the undefeated New England Patriots and that means something in Miami because of the 72 Dolphins.
Right, right,
so
right, right.
You had the Dolphins fans were upset about the Patriots. They were upset about their own team. They go through about, I don't know, four or five quarterbacks because of injuries. Ricky Williams comes back from one of his marijuana suspensions and gets injured in his first game back. Zach Thomas, their star middle linebacker, gets a concussion in a fender bender on his way. His wife's driving on the way home from a game. Somebody bumps into him from behind, rear ends him on leaving the stadium. He gets a concussion. He's done for the year, of all things. There's other things I'm leaving out. Wayne Huizenga hires Bill Parcells late in the season to come in and be the football czar. So that means Cam Cameron, the head coach, and Randy Mueller, the general manager, both fired. So now I'm covering two firings, and which means you're also about to cover two hirings. So now you have a coaching search and a GM search.
Right.
Then Wayne Huizenga decides he's going to sell the team. So now I'm covering the sale of a team. Silliness. Jason Taylor goes on Dancing with the Stars and ends up getting into a feud with Bill Parcells over it, over what's more, where's your commitment? So all this is going on my first, I just got there.
Right.
But covering all that stuff, and I got some scoops out of that, and I did a good job, and I did it for only 7 months, and ESPN hired me to cover the AFC East. And, you know, that's Sports Illustrated, ESPN, those are the dream.
Certainly.
You know, when they come calling, it's incredibly flattering. It did not live up to expectations, my time at ESPN. While I was with ESPN and still in South Florida, my wife had just had our daughter, so now we have two kids. And we were down there, and we just felt really isolated. So I approached ESPN, and I said, "Do you care where I live?" And they said, "No, as long as you're near an airport," because I was traveling to different games on Sundays anyway. So we moved back to Buffalo. And as soon as I moved back to Buffalo, the Buffalo News started trying to get me to come back. And very flattering. Margaret Sullivan was recruiting me. Brian Connolly trying to get me to come back. Lisa Wilson was the sports editor at that time. But what happened was they convinced me I was going to resign with ESPN. But ESPN offered me only a 1-year contract extension. It was a raise. It was a nice raise, but we were going into the NFL lockout and everybody was anticipating a lockout, and ESPN was trying to, I guess, reset its contracts to match up with the lockout. And so I was like, I don't know if, you know, they're going to play football. You know, I didn't think so. I didn't like that. And the Buffalo News at the time was offering a job as their lead spotlight reporter. And it was incredibly flattering to come in, not as a sports writer, but as a main feature, deep dive, enterprise writer. And so I took that job, and it was probably the most rewarding year of my career.
What year was that?
That would have been 2011.
All right.
Hang on one sec. Yeah, 2011 to 2012.
Okay.
And I did work. I mean, I went from writing blogs at ESPN.com, a lot of meaningless stuff on is Mark Sanchez going to be better than Chad Henne? You know, just garbage. But that's what ESPN needed. They had this phrase called "feed the beast," and you had to wake up every morning and just crank out content. And I went from that to the Buffalo News, where they said, "Do the best job you can on this story." And my first year back at the Buffalo News, I was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, and that's something that you're not going to get writing a Fred Jackson blog.
Right, right. I'm just going to jump out of your resume for a second because I do want to get back to this and make sure I get it. But you said, talk about Feed the Beast at ESPN and some of the things that you did. And I think all of us that have worked in broadcasting and news can relate to that to a certain extent. But can you compare and contrast that to what you do at The Athletic?
Well, what I do at The Athletic is what I was doing at the Buffalo News. It's writing deep dive features. I get time to work on them. I'm especially lately, I feel guilty because I haven't produced. I've had a couple of stories fall through, and I've put a lot of time and energy into one story in particular that it just fell through. And but The Athletic allows that to happen. They're not upset with me. In fact, they were, very empathetic about it. So they give me the time to produce the best story possible. Whereas at ESPN, and this is why I hated ESPN, working at ESPN so much. So I would wake up in the morning, and this is my own competitiveness. Now, keep in mind, I'm just coming from that Dolphin situation where I'm going up against all these newspapers.
Yep.
I mean, I am wired to go kick some ass, and I'm going to take no names. And Or do I take names? What's the phrase? Kick ass and take names? Do you take the names later? I mean, can I say that word on?
You know,
do you have to edit that out?
Well, at the end, come on. You're a writer. You're not going to sit there and fall back on cliche.
I didn't come in here thinking I was going to have to work, Jay.
no, but I was pretty. But I'm,
I had this competitiveness.
You,
right. I wanted to dominate.
Right.
You know, I wanted to. I wanted to.
If there
do
was news
great,
to have, you wanted to
absolutely.
Have
absolutely. And so I'd wake up in the morning, and before I brushed my teeth, my laptop was open, and I'm seeing what happened overnight. Now I covered the AFC East, which means I had Buffalo was my easiest market. I had New York, I had Boston, and I had Miami. And all of those markets have multiple publications. So you have, you know, so in my mind, I'm competing with the New York Daily News and the New York Post and the New York Times and the Miami Herald and the Boston Globe and you name it. And then let's not even forget the, you know, the nationals, you know, the national publications and ESPN. It's, you know, different things. What else was reported by somebody else at ESPN that I need to be aware of? The three major networks, and Sports Illustrated, and I would try to, you know, some of my job was aggregating. I had to come up with original content. I felt obligated to do original interviews because I didn't want to just be an aggregator. I mean, that's mindless
right.
and not rewarding at all. And so yeah, it was. I would work probably. Geez, 14, 15 hours a day, and I was not turning off my computer until my head was about to hit the pillow before I went to bed. Now, I had two young children at the time, and, you know, my wife's working, and kids are in daycare because I can't watch them during the day, and even though I'm working from home, technically, and I was a terrible father. I was a terrible husband. I was probably a terrible friend. I had no social life, so I guess I wasn't a – I mean, I just was a – I was absent in that regard. Didn't go out. I think I – well, I should say this. When I lived in Florida, I went out probably three times, and it was because somebody was in from out of town as a reporter or somebody I knew from Buffalo maybe. Maybe John Vogel was down covering the Florida Panthers, and I'd meet up with him by his hotel. Yeah, it was an abyss and it was a black hole of, it was just sucking all my energy and all my time. And, in that whole feed the beast mentality, which was their philosophy at the time. And it changed. Now, Mike Rodak was here covering ESPN. His was more like what I do at The Athletic. And it was write as needed. It was not writing to write. And so I joke with Mike all the time. I was like, Mike, if this was the way ESPN was when I was there, I'd still be there. But yeah, it was a demoralizing. It was a crushing 3 years of my life. And I was still going to sign up for more because it was ESPN,
right?
And there was, and I told myself I was going to see out one more 3 year contract and see how it went. And then when they offered me the 1 year, I thought, you know, that's, you know, lockout or not,
yep.
You know, and so it was, the Buff, then that's when I started, the Buffalo News, and I really came to an agreement.
Right. Okay. So then you stayed with the News then through what, 2019?
Yeah. June of 2018. Now I was in Spotlight for a year.
Right.
And I came... really proud of the work I did there, and I wish I could have stayed in that role, but circumstances didn't allow. Unfortunately, you know, tragically, Alan Wilson passed away. He was our one of our two Bills writers,
right,
along with Mark Gaughan, and he had leukemia. And here you had this guy who covered the NFL for ESPN. You know, on the other side of the room.
Right.
And so they called me out of the bullpen to kind of stabilize the Bills beat and to work with Mark Gaughan and Jay Skursky. And I think that worked out really well. The three of us worked really well together. Tyler Dunn also in that role. And then when Mark Gaughan left the beat to cover colleges and they hired Vic Carucci, and then they moved me into a sports version of what I was doing in the spotlight. So I was doing these takeout stories and big features and breaking the occasional news. And so that's what I was doing at the Buffalo News before I left.
And then you went to The Athletic.
Yeah.
What drew you?
Well, what what drew you? It's funny how you ask that question. So, was I drawn or what's
repelled?
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. It's a combination. I guess there's a drawn and repelled. Okay, so.
You weren't as happy at the Buffalo News anymore.
I was miserable, and it happened almost overnight. Yeah, I mean, here's a place where over the course of, you know, we're going back to my first year on Spotlight. Within 3 years, I was nominated for, the Buffalo News nominated me for the Pulitzer Prize 3 times. My first year was for feature writing in Spotlight. The second year, then I think I didn't get nominated. And then in the third year back to the Buffalo News, I was nominated in 2 categories, once for beat reporting, which was the Bills Sale, which I did. I've never done better work. And that also was the same year I wrote the Daryl Talley story. And so I was nominated for the Pulitzer for feature writing that year also. So 3 times in the span of 3 years. And I felt I'd never felt more intertwined with where I'm supposed to be, right?
Right.
ESPN didn't work out. I felt like I was back home. I had so much support from Mike Connolly, from Brian Connolly, from Lisa Wilson, the sports editor. Everything, Warren Buffett's ownership, the Guild, the benefits that we get there, the Berkshire Hathaway backed pension, you know, it was good. And, you would ask me 2 months, I can't remember exactly how it breaks down, but if you were to ask, I think it was like 2 months before I left for The Athletic, if I wanted to work at the Buffalo News for the rest of my life, I would have said yes.
Wow.
I'm going to retire from the Buffalo News. But then we had a quarterly loss for the first time in 40 years, and we had a meeting in which buyouts were mentioned, targeted buyouts, but I still didn't think much of it, because the only change that was going to happen in sports was that Keith McShay, who had been our interim sports editor, was going to be transferred to a different department. I hated to see that happen. I hated to see Keith go, but it wasn't like Keith was being fired. I was still going to see Keith every day, and if I was in the office, and but that was going to be the only
personnel change.
That was going to be it in sports. Mm-hmm. And then you were allowed to volunteer for buyouts if you wanted to take a buyout. So John Vogel takes the buyout. My old beat guy, we covered the Sabres together. That one hurt. But I also knew he wasn't happy. And he had told me before, the next time they offer buyouts, I'm going to take it. I didn't quite believe him. I didn't think he was lying, but I thought, when the time came, is he really going to do it?
Right.
And in my mind, I thought, I bet he doesn't. But I was ready for that, as much as I hated to see it. Let's see if I can get the order right on these. Then there's a meeting in which, and I'm not in the meeting, so I can only go based on what Bucky Gleason and Jerry Sullivan told me. They are informed that they are going to lose their columns and that they are going to now be feature writers. Now, I believe that to be 100% true. Now,
and that's what Jerry Sullivan told me.
The reasoning behind that, I'm not so sure. I mean, then it's a he said, he said.
Sure.
Jerry contends that he was told that his column was bad for business. People that I spoke with in management say we never told him that. You know, so it's there's semantics involved. Whatever they said, how he took it, doesn't matter. It obviously, we're in the communications business. There should have been some way to get through this. So Bucky Gleason takes the buyout. And then Jerry Sullivan takes the buyout. You know, they, and out of a sign of protest, I think, you know, they're taking our columns away. I'm not going to stand for this. But there's no bluff being played here. You're taking the buyout. You're taking the buyout. It's not like they're going to say, no, 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 no. We're going to give you your column back. It's you're taking it. So that's now three guys gone. So Bob DeCesare, I think, looks around and says, what the hell am I even doing here? So he takes the buyout. He's the other assistant sports editor. So now we don't have any. We went from having two assistant sports editors to none. And now we've lost our two columnists and John Vogel. Am I missing somebody here, Jay?
Was it Keith McShay already had
Keith
gone,
McShay's already
part
out.
Of the paper. Bud Bailey had left before
Bud
that.
Bud Bailey, you know, poor Bud Bailey. I wish had Bud hung on for a few more months, he would have gotten a buyout. And that's not it, because there's more after me. But so I'm looking around, and I'm like, what the hell just happened? There's a smoking crater in the middle of our sports department now. We weren't going to be touched, barely. And this is something that caused me great stress. I was depressed, and not in the type of depression where you say, man, I'm really down about this. I was depressed. I went to my doctor. I was like, look, I can't sleep at night. I mean, these were guys that I have a brother and a sister, both older than me. They both live in, well, up until recently, both lived in Ohio. I'm closer to these guys than I am my own brother and sister. And now they're gone. And there are some people there that I don't particularly enjoy working with. And these guys, I mean, anyways, whether I felt they were screwed over or not, it was regardless, they were gone.
They were gone.
It wasn't how they were gone. It was just the fact they were gone. And I'd had a preliminary discussion with The Athletic, I don't know, maybe a week earlier. Just dumb happenstance. Total coincidence. And put a pin in it. I was honored to get a phone call and thanks for reaching out. No offer was made. It was just, hey, we were just feeling each other out. So, but I wasn't sure what The Athletic was at the time. It was still starting to launch in different, I mean, I knew what it was, but I didn't know what it was going to be. And the vision of what The Athletic is, and there's still some mystery about that. But it got to the point where I thought and so here I am. I'm depressed. So I'm walking around like a loaded gun. And I get this email from my boss, and after which I've told management that I'm depressed and I'm seeking help, you know? And can we at least give me a break for a day or something. Let me process this. And I get this email of all these bullet points of all these stories that I'm supposed to do. And I'm supposed to go down to Dallas to cover the NHL draft. And Rasmus Dahlin is the number one pick because our two remaining hockey reporters are unavailable. So, all right. For whatever, however that happens. I mean, we just lost John Vogel. We have two other hockey writers, but they can't go cover the number one draft pick. They wanted me to go to Erie to cover Vladimir Guerrero Jr. coming through with his AA team before he gets called up to the Bisons. I was supposed to do, I don't know, some other Bills story in a hockey. I don't even know what it was, but there was this rundown of pretty much saying, Tim, you're all we got. And we need you because of your versatility to come in and do all this stuff. And I snapped. And I contacted my doctor again, and I said, I need to see somebody. And so we actually got to the point where I had mental health. I needed a couple of weeks off. I don't know how hard we need to get into that, but towards the end of that, I had 2 weeks where I just disconnected. Towards the end of those 2 weeks, I got a phone call again from The Athletic with a job offer. And I was uncertain about The Athletic. And again, there's still mysteries about it. Are we going to go public? Are we going to be sold? I mean, who knows? We don't know. We only know what management tells us. We're confident in management. I like everything I've heard. And I'm excited about being at The Athletic. But at the time, it was, all right, my decision was this. Do I want to stay at some place that I thought was a sure thing, but is now miserable and everybody's walking around like we're in a mausoleum and depressed and trying to get psyched up to do work when everybody in the office has the 100-yard stare going? Or I can go someplace that has uncertainty, but everybody's excited and we want to work together. It was a no-brainer for me.
So The Athletic, describe The Athletic to those who are uninitiated with what The Athletic is.
All right. So The Athletic is a sports website that is subscription only, and there are no ads, no pop-ups, no videos, nothing like that. It is just pure sports content. And the way I like to explain it is, a lot of people talk about subscribing to a newspaper, but subscribing to The Athletic is like signing up for the New York Times, but also getting the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, the Miami Herald, the Dallas Morning News. You're everything because you, for one price, you're a Bills fan or you're a Sabres fan, and you sign up for your Bills and Sabres coverage, but you also get access to everything. So you get your Yankees, your Red Sox, your Phoenix Suns, your Golden State Warriors, all of that's included for whatever it is, whatever the price is, and there are different discounts that they're constantly offering, but $3.99 a month, you know, $5.99 a month. And we have bureaus in every major league market. So in Buffalo, we have 5 full-time staffers. It's a shame to hear. I mean, I hate to... of what's going on with newspapers. So I just learned at the Combine last week, I was talking to a former colleague of mine at the Palm Beach Post. They are down to 3 full-time sports writers after more layoffs just last week. 3 full-time sports writers. Think of all the sports that are down there in South Florida to cover. You have
absolutely
Dolphins, Marlins, Panthers, Heat,
Hurricanes,
Miami Hurricanes, Florida Gators, high schools, all that stuff.
Right.
And they have 3 sports writers. The Athletic Buffalo has 5. You have reporters in every market covering every major league team. And the content, I think, it's not rushed. We don't have a deadline to hit. We don't have trucks with their engines idling out there. We don't have to pay the Teamsters overtime because we're going to be late with our Thursday night Bills at Cowboys story. We don't have presses or any of that stuff. It's just the story. When the story's ready, it's posted online. You can read it. It's an incredibly pure form of sports journalism.
When you look at where The Athletic is, when you look at, like you talked about your former colleague down in Palm Beach, and you know what is happening at the Buffalo News, which up until relatively recently was considered one of the stronger financially based newspapers in the country, do you just see the newspaper industry as being unsustainable?
When you talk about the physical newspaper, holding it in your hands, yes. And I think it goes to some of the things I was just talking
right
about, the trucks and the presses and the advertising and the way it's structured. I think that every town, you would hope, is able to maintain a news organization that can transmit digitally, whether it be you know, through your phone or your tablet or whatever. And there will be a need for reporters and editors, and I'm talking about managerial editors. I think what we're seeing too around the newspaper industry too is the elimination of copy editors. I think it's almost getting to the point where typos and mistakes are okay. You know, I was just having a discussion at the Combine with our top editor at The Athletic, Paul Fichtenbaum, who used to run Sports Illustrated, and all the different tiers of fact checkers and editors that they used to have at Sports Illustrated. It used to be a major event if you ever saw a typo in Sports Illustrated. You would see maybe one a year. If you read that magazine cover to cover, 52 issues, you might see one typo. And as he was saying, when that typo occurred, there was hell to pay. Like a head would roll. And now in Sports Illustrated, anything, you see typos all over the place, all over the place. And so I think there's almost an expectation of, well, you're going to get that. And I think some of that too comes from how we transmit and how we communicate with each other. It's not just a lack of copy editors. It's how we text.
Right.
It's how we tweet. You know, we abbreviate things and we use, you know, the letter U instead of Y-O-U, and we eliminate punctuation. And I think people are getting more and more used to, well, as long as we get the information, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Hmm.
And so I think that we're – so anyways, I mean, that's my aside regarding, I think copy editors are now being increasingly viewed as unnecessary, or maybe certainly not as many of them.
Right.
And so you have these universal desks. And, you know, we're getting back to – you know, so when I told the Buffalo News I was going to leave, they wanted me to wait, you know, give it another week. Don't, you know, think about it. And things are going to get better. We're going to fill these positions just because Jerry and Bucky and John Vogel left. You know, we're going to fill them. And we ended up later losing Amy Moritz also. And I paused and I thought about it. And because the Buffalo News had been very good to me and these editors had been very good to me. So why not trust them? But about a week after I made my decision to leave the Buffalo News, they stripped Colin Dabkowski of his column and his, you know, his cultural voice. And he is one of my favorite people, and he's also one of my favorite writers. And when that happened to him, I knew right then that I made the right decision. Mm. I had zero regret. And what they did was they put him on the universal copy desk. And here is somebody who knew and still knows zero about sports, and he's editing sports copy.
Mm.
And so, and by the way, also, I added up the institutional knowledge that the Buffalo News lost. I want to say it was like 135 years of the sports department. That's not Bucky Gleason's time with the Associated Press in Philly, or my time in Las Vegas or in Ohio, or John Vogel's time in Georgia, or Sully's time covering the NBA for Newsday. That was just our number of years working at the Buffalo News of all the people who were gone. It was an outrageous number. So think of the stories that are being written. And you do see them today. You'll read a story and you think, man, that's not the way I remember it. Or there is a glaring like omission in this story. Like you're taking a look back at something that had, you know, at somebody's career.
Right.
And I don't want to be too specific with an example, because I don't want any writer to feel – because it's not their fault. But to read this story and say, that's not the point. That's not the story.
Right.
That's not what this guy was about.
They just don't have that experience.
Yeah, because you can just go back. You only learn so much by going back and looking at, and seeing the guy's career stats or whatever. It's so anyway, it's I think – I don't. We got off track, didn't we?
Yeah, no, but it's good though. And because you brought up a couple of interesting things there, and I just want to follow up, and then I think we'll have to let you go because we're running out of water for you. But
I'm all right, man. I'm just kidding. I warned you before we got started.
That's true. But all right, so there's a point not too long ago you were at the newspaper and you thought you were going to be there forever, then you weren't. And now you're at The Athletic and you feel like right now things are rolling well and you like the way things are working for you. But what about beyond this time? I mean, now we've looked back a lot Can we look forward a little bit here? I thought you brought in an interesting point about the way we communicate now. I've never heard somebody quite say it like that, how different our communication is now. But just putting all that together, what do you see down the road for sports journalists? What do you see down the road for the consumer, the sports journalist?
You know, where I'm most fascinated to see how it unfolds is local sports. And what I mean by that is youth sports, high school sports, colleges that aren't top 25. Say Canisius College men's basketball or Niagara or, UB has reached a certain success that they find a way to get covered. But, Niagara men's hockey or, there's all kinds of examples you can give. I think that you're not going to have to worry about the Bills and the Sabres. They're going to get covered. And the Buffalo News or some organization. But here's the other thing, too. Now here's this circular talking where I'm just kind of talking myself through it. Covering a hockey team covering any sports team that's not the NFL is really expensive. Covering the NFL isn't cheap. But the other sports, you're talking about sometimes two, and you're talking about 41 road games. If you're going to cover every game of the Sabres season or every game of an NBA season, also 41 games, 81 games of a Major League Baseball season, that's a serious expense. And you're going to have to find enough subscribers to pay for that expense. It used to be your classified section paid for all that stuff. And then if your team got good enough where they made the playoffs, then your special sections would pay for, some other things. So that way you could cover school board meetings and go out of town and cover civic issues you could go to Pittsburgh and write about how the certain renaissance in Pittsburgh might affect Buffalo. Or I remember reading about Louisville, Kentucky being a model for what Buffalo could become right. Someday. You go to Louisville to write that story. But it'll be interesting to see how the high school sports gets covered. And I think that we're already seeing an atrophy of that. I wouldn't be surprised if someday newspaper, the Buffalo News, as other newspapers have, to stop printing the scores because there's an expense to hiring somebody to sit there and answer the phones and take the scores, or to find some way to somehow in a computer format so the teams submit their stuff on a computer and it just runs in the paper, or it just gets, there's all kinds of different things I wonder about that. But you don't see the big four basketball teams covered like they used to be because there aren't as many. There used to be two and a half. I mean, you used to have Mark Gaughan, Amy Moritz, and, I'm trying to think. I mean, Bob DeCesare used to cover a lot of UB Certainly. Basketball. I'm sure I'm even leaving. Well, then you'd have Jerry Sullivan and Bucky Gleason writing columns. So you'd one would cover the Mid-American Conference tournament and the other would, or they'd have two and two.
Right.
It's just not, and then you'd have that cycle all throughout the season too, right. I think that the local coverages or the local sports are what's going to suffer. And I think that's kind of interesting because that's the stuff that I think people are going to miss the most. Because you can get your NFL coverage so many places, and you can get your NHL coverage not as many places as the NFL, but you still how many people are going to subscribe to a newspaper when that's all they cover?
Right.
I don't know. And that's not what I'm saying that the Buffalo News is doing, but things are shrinking
toward – But it's coming to that.
Things are shrinking towards that. Mm-hmm. They're shrinking towards just the big sports. And the big names and all those, because that's what gets the clicks. And then within that, then you step within that world. And then within covering the Bills, the things that get the clicks are Josh Allen, anybody who's on a fantasy team. And so then you start looking, all right, so now we cover the Bills and the Sabres. But within those two teams, we're noticing that our metrics are showing that when we write about the offensive line, nobody clicks on it. Or when we write about this guy who's got a really interesting story on the practice squad, nobody's clicking on it. So let's just hammer – let's just write Josh Allen, Josh Allen, Josh Allen. Or let's – Jack Eichel, Jack Eichel, Jack Eichel. And – or trends or some – you know,
sure.
You're constantly
sure
trying to work the metrics.
And then allow me then to just see if I can't give this one – this question a shot here.
Let's see if I can't answer something clearly for a change.
Well, let's see if the question's clear enough. So in other conversations with some of your former colleagues, I've had that the click mentality, the click idea that the clicks are what we need. Is there a long-term problem beyond just giving, you know, beyond giving highlights and spotlights to high schools and colleges and things like that, even inside the coverage of a team where – the offensive line doesn't generate it doesn't generate any interest, whatever the case may be. Eventually, this is going to consume itself, that eventually we're only going to be talking about the quarterback. We're only going to be talking about the wide receivers who are on a sports fantasy team. I mean, is there something problematic about that?
Well, yeah, if it comes to that, and yeah, you're talking about the clicks and – geez, that's kind of a dystopian result. You're not going to get a clear answer out of me. I've never thought of it this way, so I'm going to, again, I'll be circular in my response. I think
it was a pretty circular question, you must admit.
At some point, too, it was. At some point, too, though, I think maybe the audience would get sick of that and maybe – want to hear something else. I mean, so maybe that's where the balance is. So maybe it's 70-30 instead, you know, on you 70% of the coverage is one guy, but mm-hmm. at least you get 30% on the other. I think getting sick of the same thing over and over again is what's made the Athletic so popular in Buffalo. And I hear nothing but, you know, great things about our profitability in Buffalo. And I think it's because people were dying for something different. And are we really different? I mean, we still have Tim Graham and John Vogel. Matthew Fairburn and Joe Biscaglia were covering the Bills in different formats that were free. And Joe Yerden was covering the Sabres and for a free website. And but people were craving. They were dying for something different. You had a sports department that had been essentially unchanged for a long time. You have the sports radio show. There's really only, at the time, there were only two shows that weren't owned by the Pegulas. And now there's additional stuff with some younger hosts who I think are doing some great things. But the lineup on sports radio had been essentially unchanged for a long, long time. And I think the Western New York sports fan was just begging for something different. They just wanted different. And the Athletic came along, and purely coincidental, the Athletic came along at just the time that the Buffalo News had sat back and watched all of its sports people leave. And that's the thing that that a lot of people might not know about how buyouts work at the Buffalo News. After a couple, the Buffalo News could have said, all right, no more. All right, we need to stabilize. We need, but they didn't. They just kept taking the buyouts and accepting and accepting and accepting. And I didn't get a buyout. I didn't get one. I left just because. I would like to have had a buyout and left.
Certainly.
But I didn't get one.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. I was considered indispensable. I was not – Vic Carucci and I were the two people in the sports department who were not allowed to take the buyout if we wanted it because we were deemed indispensable.
Oh.
So as nice as that was to hear, I left anyway.
Gotcha. Tim Graham, this was a whole lot of fun. I appreciate your time.
Was it fun?
Oh, it was very fun. I hope I had fun.